Earlier this week, when I was considering what I wanted to talk about, I had an idea in mind. But then when I sat down to put pen to paper, a different thought intruded upon my mind, and I had to deal with it. And that new thought was called the way forward. So I decided to think about that a little bit, and I realized in order to make progress, we need to become aware of the way forward. Like any travel, there are undoubtedly many, many ways forward. I live in Florida. If I want to go to New York, I can fly, I can drive. I can drive multiple directions in order to get there. I can take routes that are known to be faster and others that are known to be more scenic. So the fact of the matter is, doing anything, there are many ways to move forward. And of course, there are lots of opinions about what direction really represents forward. Some people would suggest that forward is increased obedience to dogma, increased adherence to rules and traditions and rituals that have been established by other people. And other people would say, no, the way to move forward would be greater freedom, an elevation of consciousness, and the opinions would go on and on. In this exploration of the way forward, I'm going to be talking metaphorically and literally about it. Now, it's Sunday, and this time of the year in America, we have a lot of American football going on later in the afternoon. So forward in terms of direction on an American football field means toward the opponent's goal line. If I'm talking about in automobile travel, the final destination in one direction is the way forward. But in that direction, there would also be, I'll say, sub-destinations, or what we might call milestones, and that's the way we would measure progress. You know, when the child in the back seat says, are we there yet? Are we there yet? We would have answered that question in our own minds, whether there were children in the back seat talking about it or not. We would know that, yep, we're advancing. I see what mileage marker I'm at on my highway, and I know I'm getting closer and closer to my destination. Education is seen as the path, and it's also a tool that makes the path available. Now, if we had no education, there are certain things that we're not going to be able to do. There are certain games of life in the economic system with which we're not going to be able to engage simply because we wouldn't be admitted. So we wouldn't be able to participate. So if education is the path, and also it makes a path available, that means education is the way forward and the means to access the way forward. I like to imagine the 12 worlds as a geometric shape with 12 facets, and that shape is called a dodecagon, D-O-decagon. If we're like a crystal of consciousness, and I think that's actually possible, that we are a crystal of consciousness, and sometimes I'm wondering if when we are impacted by trauma, either a physical hit, like on a football field, or a slip and a fall, or an emotionally traumatic experience like humiliation or embarrassment, if that puts a crack in the crystal, which then is similar to the situation where there's a break in the skin and an infection sets in. I think there's some validity to that idea. I'm in no position to be able to scientifically validate it, but it makes sense to me. But if we are, in fact, a 12 or more facet crystal, the brilliance of each one of those facets, and simply put, those 12 make it a little bit more manageable than if we had an infinite number of facets, the brilliance of those facets would be our responsibility, because that would be the way forward. And maybe the activities that would polish the facet would be the way forward. That's how we would know, yeah, I'm moving forward. How do you know? Because I'm shining, I'm polishing, I'm developing, I'm enhancing the brilliance of one of these facets. And the 12 worlds consists of the spiritual world, the mental world, the emotional world, the physical world, the family world, the career world, the financial world, the social world, leisure world, community world, political world, and maintenance world. And you'd go, if I wanted to polish those, what activities would I do to enhance any one of those worlds? And if I did those activities, what effects would they cause? And then what we would want to do is define what we see as polished. For some people, you say, what do you mean by being polished or enhanced spiritually? They would say, I go to church on Sunday for an hour. Period. End of story. That's it. Anything else? Prayer? Meditation? Nope. 1 hour a week. That does it for me. Okay. I would suggest that there is greater breadth and depth and height of being polished. So looking at those worlds, spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, family, career, financial, social, leisure, community, political, and maintenance world, what would polished mean to you? And when, if you could decide that and go, not all 12 of those have the greatest importance to me. And in fact, of the 12, only 9 of them or 10 of them or 7 of them really, really resonate with me. And that's what I want to focus on. Perfect. So if you would define what polished means in each of those worlds and the specific activities that if you successfully completed them would result in that condition that you desire, and then you would list that activity. And then, not having a list of activities, that's not the end point. There's something that says, if you want to get it done, you have to schedule it. So if you don't write this activity into an appointment book or on a to-do list that you start to habituate and make a part of your daily ritual and structure, it's not going to get done. So everything that we've talked about would be just words. But after doing that, I decided that was not really what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to talk about reward seekers. I was reading an article in the National Geographic the other day, and the feature on the front cover was addiction. Predictably, the author of the article emphasized that chemicals would be the primary way to overcome addictions. If you're addicted to fill in the blank, pharmaceutical companies would provide you with chemicals to help you do away with it. In fairness, though, the author also dealt with the idea of electromagnetism being used to shift patterns in the brain. Now, from a Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth point of view, and in the book, the reference to the electromagnetic nature of existence is emphasized again and again. That intrigued me. Since you're electromagnetic, I'm electromagnetic, so is the Earth, the Sun, and the Moon, and everything else, visible and invisible. Everything is electromagnetic. And so I thought that was cool. But the point of this talk in reward seekers caused me to notice this quote from a clinical neuroscientist. And she said, we are all exquisite reward detectors. That's the quote that got me thinking. And that's why I wanted to explore that idea. I understand rewards, at least to a certain extent. Having been in sales and sales management for 30-plus years, I saw how incentives work. I saw that different people responded to different rewards. A pat on the back for somebody was enormously influential. A kick in the ass for others was enormously influential. Coming in first and having your name recognized as a top salesperson drove lots of behavior, most of it productive, sometimes unethical or immoral, but it certainly drove human behavior. So did the chance for promotion. Certainly in sales, financial incentives were really powerful in influencing sales behaviors. It's kind of like the mouse and the cheese. If a mouse pushes this button and gets the cheese, guess what that mouse is going to learn how to do? Repetitively, push the button. Salespeople did the same thing. Human beings do the same thing. We're exquisite reward detectors. Now, not everybody is employed directly in sales, but everyone detects rewards and behaves because of them. The question becomes, what rewards are at the bottom of each one of our behaviors? If you do something or don't do something, what rewards are underlying that action or inaction? If we understand that, we become more aware and we're more able to influence ourselves to achieve whatever it is we want in life. Let's assume for a moment that action is fueled by the perceived energy of a reward. So just imagine, there you are, and outside of you, a little distance away, is a reward, and you perceive that there's some energy in that reward that you want. That means that the hard work that you would do at night is fueled by your perception of the reward underlying that hard work at night. The same is true when you procrastinate a chore, you put something off. There is some sort of reward driving that procrastination. It's not happening for no reason at all. Christ in the letter says, if there is an effect, there is a cause. And if there is a cause, there will be an effect. And knowing that, we can start looking at this. It's widely known that illness can produce the reward of attention in the forms of medical attention, caring, pity, on and on. Give something to somebody to talk about. Carolyn Mace would refer to that as woundology. People have a condition or an illness, and then they use that as their permanent form of identification. I'm a cancer survivor. I'm a this survivor. I'm a domestic abuse survivor. And they wear that like a label, like a uniform, like a badge. Carolyn Mace would say, people, those support groups that you belong to are really designed to be like a boat that get you from one side of the river to the other. Get in the boat, get supported, get to the other side of the river, and get out of the boat. Don't make it permanent. The idea of that people will do all kinds of things for attention is also understood. So much so that this statement, any attention, even negative attention, is better than no attention. The no attention equals no reward. And if you can't give attention to yourself or you can't get it from other people, that's not a good thing. The idea of people disobeying, rules and rituals of an organization, maybe a religion that leads to shunning. The idea is that person gets disconnected from the tribe, and now there are no rewards coming to that person from the tribe to which they had belonged before. Now, no energy, no support, no rewards. These people, over time, have been known to just wither and die from that lack of energy, that lack of exchange, that lack of reward. The idea of pain, pleasure, fear, love, they've been used in business, they've been used in society, they're used in families, they're used in the military to influence behaviors in others. We move toward pleasure and we move away from pain. It's a survival thing. You know, an amoeba would do the same thing. A paramecium would do the same thing. Plants do the same thing. It's no surprise that we move away from pain because the continuation of pain is seen as a threat to our existence, to our survival. And the need to survive is so strong that it's been developed in life forms the know-how to, I got to get out of here. I got to move away from this pain. We could also say that not moving toward pain is a reward. And maybe that sentence explains the basis of procrastination. If the activity that we're procrastinating about is likely to be a source of pain, either emotional pain or mental or physical pain, not doing it could be a temporary reward of no pain. There's some other possibility of reward for doing the activity, the one that we're procrastinating, but apparently, because we're successful at procrastinating, that is, at not doing, you could look at it, doing and not doing, which one has the greatest energy potential? And if we're procrastinating, then not doing it is winning the battle at that moment. It is influencing us even more than our desire to do it, to accomplish it, and whatever other rewards that are associated with it. So if no pain, not making a mistake, is more powerful, more rewarding on some level than doing it, accomplishment, achieving, then we're not going to do it. There's no doubt that comfort, convenience, and instant gratification are important rewards. They drive a lot of human behavior. Frankly, I think much of what we do and much of what we don't do are driven by these factors. I'm comfortable. Let's do something different. No, I'm comfortable. No, that's not convenient. And how long will it take? Because I got to have instant gratification. I'm not doing anything. Okay. Using the DISC personality assessment system as the basis, I can see rewards would be, most important to each personality type. D, which is referred to as dominant, those people are action takers. They would be rewarded by doing and controlling. They take charge kind of people. And they want to start a project and they want to control it from start to finish. That's the reward. Getting it done. I's, influential, are people who are more social. They want to involve other people. They want the social aspects of this. They like talking about a project, organizing things with groups of people. They like being a part of a group. That's where the reward comes from. S's, which stands for steady, are people who seek to balance risk and reward. They tend to be peacemakers. They want to keep everything going smoothly. They don't want to make waves, and they don't want things to get out of control. They tend to be pacifiers of situations. Somebody who steps into a volatile situation and tries to calm everybody down, likely to have their S active in that situation. And so they would see rewards at being able to balance all of this stuff, trying to keep everything under control. They don't mind as a little bit of movement and up and down, but over dramatic situations, hysteria, not for them. A C, which stands for conscientious, tend to be information-oriented people. They like a lot of information. And so they would find it rewarding knowing everything about everything, because a reward to them is knowing things and avoiding mistakes. They don't want to be wrong. They don't want to do things wrong. They don't want to cause harm by making a mistake. And that brings me to the opposite of a reward. If we're reward detectors, if I flip that over, what would we be? I would think maybe the word penalty could be used there. So we're penalty detectors. Not doing would be a penalty to a D, because they need to take action. And if we prevented them from taking action, that would be a penalty. Or if something in their environment was preventing them from taking action and accomplishing, starting and controlling a project, that would be a penalty. And I, if they were prevented from socializing and talking about situations and adding drama to it and making it fun and exciting and organizing things around that, that would be a penalty. For an S would be their inability to balance the risks with countermeasures. So it's kind of like the seesaw is always out of balance and there's nothing they can do to change that. No matter what happens, it's going to be out of balance. That would be a penalty for them. And a C would feel penalized for not having enough information, but at the same time being forced to make a decision based upon their lack of information. So it becomes really risky. That's thin ice. The potential for being wrong and making a mistake go really high. That's a penalty. Now, looking at that personality assessment of DISC is one way to look at it, but we could always look at it from the terms of the ego, because the ego is more direct and can be even more extreme in its reward seeking. The ego, with its four driving needs, brooks no interference because it only thinks about that individual. My ego thinks about me, not you. Your ego thinks about you, not me. And the same is true for everybody else. And if that ego is dominant in influencing me or you or other people, then we got a whole bunch of bulls in the china shop. So the rewards that the ego seeks is to successfully defend the self, finish first in the race of life every single time, take the best for itself every single time, and hold on to its possessions, whatever it's acquired, whatever it's taken. It wants to hold on to it and prevent other people from taking it from them. You already know the penalties that the ego imposes on the self and on others, because it is severe and withering castigation, self-disapproval, self-attack, vicious criticism of other people, nitpicking, and worse. It's real clear that we are not going to change the fact that human beings and living beings are reward seekers. We can, however, change the nature of the rewards that we seek. Doesn't always have to be comfort, doesn't always have to be convenient, doesn't always have to be instant gratification. We can overcome the ego reward seeking. We can overcome rejecting as a reward. We can devise ways to continue bonding with steps leading to a higher and higher form of reward. Depending on the personality types, each of us, we should be able to determine very small steps toward higher rewards so as not to be stymied or overwhelmed by obstacles that we imagine into being. If we take little baby steps, then our progress is assured. If we only insist upon taking giant steps, I want to go from 0 to 60 without going through 10, 20, 30, 40, and 50, I'm never going to get to 60. I know that as you accelerate in a car or in life, as you move forward, you're gradually going to make progress. And if we understand that, it takes some of the pressure off of us. A D who feels stymied would be want to see the smaller actions that they could take. Instead of, I need to accomplish this by the Friday afternoon, it's like, whoa, what can I do right now? What can I do right now that is one little step forward in my progress? And that I would want to reach out and in small ways seek to connect with other people so they have this energy flow between them and other people that would be gratifying and rewarding. S's, the steadies, would want to consider multiple viewpoints. The first thing is alarmist, as all of us can be. Oh, I can't do it. I can't balance things. Time out. Look in a lot of different directions. Look for other points of view so that now when we look in a lot of different directions, we can see that there are ways to minimize risks. And a C, information driven, got to have more information. If a C can relax, slow down, and allow themselves to receive awareness, that receiving awareness from a higher source is way better than, I got to Google this, I got to go to the library, I got to go to a bookstore, I got to buy something that contains solidified information like a book or a training program. If they can relax and allow themselves to receive awareness, that's going to be much better off than seeking an avalanche of information to make themselves feel secure. Habits are an interesting aspect of human behavior. Now, habits are designed to make us more efficient as we go on automatic pilot and think about other things while our bodies do things like drive the car, go for a walk, and a variety of other activities that don't require full mental attention after we've become practiced at them. I could say that habits are like electromagnetic pathways or trends that we have created. Moving on a familiar path is easier than breaking a new path. Familiarity is a reward. We like it. We trust it. We can relax because uncertainty is reduced. Why? Because I'm familiar with it. There is a bonding feature to habits that holds us to them and them to us. They can feel like forms of gravity that resist our attempts to change. When we want to do something different than our habit has acclimated us to, we're like, oh, this is difficult. This is difficult. Yeah, it is. We've all faced a situation in which we know we should do something. It would be good for me to do this. I'd be proud of myself if I did this. The end result would be wonderful if I did this. Say, if I exercised, or if I dished out smaller portions at dinner time, or if I meditated daily, or any number of activities. But we don't do it. Part of us wants to, but that part is not as powerful as the part that is holding on to the way we're doing things now. We want to do it, but that part can't break us free from habit. It's not powerful enough to move us forward onto a new path. Why is that so common? Because could it be because we are bonded to what we're doing? What we're doing is comfortable. Even if it's not, you know, on a scale of 0 to 10, it's not 10. It doesn't have to be that comfortable. But we're like, but I'm familiar with it. You know, the devil I know is better than the devil I don't know. That sort of mindset that people adopt. What we're doing is comfortable, and changing is to risk discomfort. Inertia, like gravity, takes a lot of energy to overcome it. It's said that 80% of the fuel of a rocket launch is consumed in the initial effort to overcome the gravitational pull of the Earth. Pulling out of inertia is similar to us. We're always bonded to something. And if we recognize that, finding a purpose to bond with that's new is to seek a new, higher reward, which in turn would increase our will to move forward. Purpose is out there. It's kind of the destination, if you will. It's the higher inspiration. It is the moon or Mars or whatever it happens to be that is further out there. But the will is in here. That's in us. That's where we connect to that purpose when we've defined it, and then our will is what enables us to lock onto it and stay the course. The trouble with so many common rewards today is that they're heavily marketed, they're easily attained, and they require very little effort on our part and almost no personal responsibility. Think junk food. Like, whoa. Laziness actually makes rewards look appealing. And laziness, if it's an aspect of comfort, is seen by many as a reward. What are you doing? Nothing. And it's good. Okay. In the first sentence of the prayer I'm about to recite at the end, contains this phrase, and our highest inspiration. To me, that speaks to the rewards that we can become aware of if we are open to them. So, the question becomes, what are the highest rewards you could aspire to and actively seek? You are a reward seeker. Now, choose the rewards you want to seek. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.